Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Fancast Movies Podcast. We are a podcast about movies, and you can find us on Fandango.com and on Movies.com. My name is Eric Davis. You can find me on Twitter at Eric with a K, Davis, and my co-host, who joins me every week, and I'm so happy that he does, is Mr. Sean O'Connell. You can find him on Twitter at Sean underscore O'Connell. And Sean, you know, this is going to be our big best of the year podcast, and this has been an awesome year for movies. And I didn't tell me that's not just me, because I'm putting together this top 10 that we all put together, these critics, and it is so difficult to put together this top 10 this year because I've just loved so many movies.
It's so funny that you say that, because I was just having a conversation with a friend of mine where normally when I do my top 10, I've got 8 movies that I'm really confident about, and then like 9 and 10 are movies that if I came back to the list like 2 years from now, I might be able to convince myself that they don't belong there. You know, like, I really like them right now, but maybe they just wouldn't make the cut again.
Yeah. I replaced my 8, 9, and 10 about 3 different times.
Yeah, it's so easy to do. But this year, for whatever reason, I've got 15 that very easily could just be, you know, my most beloved movies this year. I could even probably expand it to 20. It has been a tremendous, tremendous year.
It has been, and unfortunately, we don't have the time to just love all over 40 different movies, because we can.
Yes.
We can. But we want to kind of single out our favorites, the best of the year. And, you know, this is the first year, and I think about 5 years that I'm doing the top 10 list, just because I never feel like I've seen enough when I get to this point of the year. This year, because I went to Toronto and because I'm in the Broadcast Film Critics Association, I'm seeing a lot of the stuff, watched a ton of movies, and I feel like I can competently write up a top 10 list. So it's exciting. And that's what we're going to do. What Sean and I did is we took our top fives off of our top 10 list and we just threw them together. And from that, we produced a joint top five, I guess we can say, that you and I, five movies that we feel like, above all else, are five movies that just resonated the most with the two of us.
Yeah, definitely. We could defend these wholeheartedly.
Yeah, and that's how I look at a top 10. Like, when I'm writing this top 10, I'm not saying these are the top 10 movies that I feel are the best and that you should think they're the best of the year. But for me, I always look at it personally, and I say, look, these are the 10 movies that just resonated with me the most, and this is why they did that. Either it was a specific story that I related to personally, or maybe they just took a convention that we're used to seeing and just flipped it and did something different with it. And that's kind of how I approach a top 10. How do you approach a top 10?
Well, it's extremely personal. And in all of the – like every time I do an intro for a top 10, I do try to say to the people, like, you know, everyone's list is completely subjective, and my top 10 might not be what yours are going to be. And of course, every critic is going to have a different list. But these are the ones that I think I could pull off the shelf, you know, at any time and drop it into the DVD player, and whoever's in the room is going to find something to appreciate. But like, you know, years ago, I think I singled out a movie like Garden State, which to me just spoke to, you know, something that affected me. And I was like, it hit me in a very personal level. And I think I said, like, right up front, It might not be the best film you've seen this year, but for this reason, this is why it's at the top of my list. So this is our one time, although a lot of times your reviews get pretty personal, this is the time where you can really single out and say, these are the 10 movies that affected me, and I'm going to try and explain to you why.
Exactly. These movies are not going to be for everybody, and I think we should start with one film that is on this top five that we're going to talk about that I know will not be for everybody, and it's a freaky film. I saw it at Sundance last year. It is Stoker. And now this is one of your favorites, so I want you to talk about it.
Well, I'm so glad you're bringing it up, because it came out, you know, so early in the year, and I think that the critical community got really behind it, but then no one really checked it out. It didn't make a ton of money, and I'm hoping that it gets back into some kind of awards consideration, because it's so good. But it's disturbing. I mean, it's this story of a creepy family. Nicole Kidman is the mom and Mia Wasikowska is the daughter, and her father, played by Dermot Mulroney, passes away. And when the family gets together for the funeral, the father's brother comes back into the picture, and it plays on these themes that Hitchcock loved to explore and Brian De Palma loved to explore. This dirty feeling you get when a family member is just a little bit off. His name is Uncle Charlie. He takes a really peculiar interest in the main character, in the girl, whose last name is Stoker, and she gets picked on at school because of it. But it's the fact that it's a coming-of-age story, if you can believe it, but it's a coming-of-age story told through the perspective of somebody who's dealing with a death in the family. And it's got some really sinister aspects to it. The way that it's put together by the filmmaker Park Chan-wook just has a lot of symmetry. Like, it's so fun to watch, to see how the themes sort of snap together through these visual images that he chooses. It's got some really, really good performances in it, but it's disturbing. But while you're watching it, every time some really cool scene, like a very cool visual, sort of snaps into play, I found myself as an audience member or as a film critic sort of saying, oh my God, look at that. That's so cool. I can't believe he tried that. And then I'd fall right back into the spell that the story was trying to weave because the performances are so good. It's got some great surprises to the end of it. It's a unapologetically sinister thriller, and it's definitely one of the favorite things I've seen this year.
Yeah, it's a crazy movie. For the one thing I remember most about this movie is this opening credits. I think it's got a really great opening credit sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And just visually, it's stunning and it's beautiful. But underneath all that is just a really creepy vibe the whole way through. And you call it a coming-of-age movie, and she actually, I think she's the only character in this year full of coming-of-age movies who, I'd say, literally comes of age in the movie. it's just a really kind of bizarre film that all of a sudden you find yourself kind of overcome. It's like this opening sequence that's just beautiful, visually hypnotizes you, and then you're under its spell, this film's spell, the entire film. And it's just a really cool movie that I definitely recommend, and as does Sean, picking it up and checking it out. It's now on DVD and Blu-ray. So moving on to our next movie. What do we want to talk? Let's talk about Inside Llewyn Davis.
Oh, you're jumping all the way up there. Okay,
I am jumping all the way up there. Well, it's my number one of the year. It's not your number one.
It's not my number one. It might not even make my top 10.
Which is crazy. But I understand that, because we talk about films that personally resonate us as the films we're putting on these top 10. And Inside Llewyn Davis is just a film that spoke to me. Maybe it's because I'm a native New Yorker or what have you. But it just really spoke to me in a lot of different ways. Inside Llewyn Davis, of course, is the new movie from the Coen brothers, who nobody does dialogue the way they do.
Right.
They just...
Especially when they find an actor who understands the rhythm of their dialogue.
Yes.
Which I think Oscar Isaac really does as the lead character.
As does John Goodman. I mean, when he's in a Coen brothers movie, he is fantastic in it. It boggles my mind that this cast is not getting more recognized, is not being recognized for its ensemble more. I think it's fantastic. I think we've never seen Carey Mulligan like this before. She is just so angry and foul-mouthed, and I've always seen her as sort of this delicate kind of actress in these movies that a lot of guys fall in love with. Well, here you love nothing about this girl. She's just so nasty. But yeah, I just, you know, I love the movie. I love the way it bounces around. It follows Oscar Isaac. Of course, he plays a musician, a folk singer, who used to be a member of a group, a duo, and is now no longer. I don't want to spoil why, but he's no longer part of that duo, and he's sort of trying to find his way now and trying to find his life as a solo artist, and it's not working. And he's a guy who has such a beautiful voice, and his songs are so great, but he's sort of fallen out of love with folk singing. And now he's at the point where he's just doing it and just hoping that something just comes out of it, and it does it. And he kind of goes through this life and just goes through the movie being miserable, and all these miserable things happen to him. And it's just really fun to watch, I think. And
here's my thing about it, and here's why it might not make my top 10, or I would like to revisit it. It's expertly made. Obviously, the Coen brothers make tremendous films, and it looks fantastic, and the music is great. But when it ended, I just kind of felt like it was another telling of a starving artist's story, and I felt like we've seen those stories told before. Maybe not quite as good as this, But I was waiting for the other shoe to sort of drop and have it be about something a little bit more than, you know, is this guy going to finally get the break that he's been looking for? And again, I'm not trying to shortchange it because I do think that there's a lot of stuff going on in the subtext of this film. But I just – the Coen brothers, when they connect, it can be, you know, transcendental. I thought that Lewin is really good – a really good film and really good by their standards. But I've seen them – I just feel like I've seen them do deeper. So –
yeah, I really love kind of the when they do schlubs. And I mean, Big Lebowski is one of my favorite ones. And, you know, I just think that they love to punish their characters.
Yes.
Just punish them. One of my favorite stories of the Coen brothers is that because Steve Buscemi talked so much in Fargo, they actually made him – they punished him in Big Lebowski by every time he opens his mouth, the other characters scream at him. And they did that on purpose because he got to talk so much in Fargo. And so not only do they punish their characters, but they punish their actors for talking a lot in other movies. And I just think it's hysterical. But I wasn't watching the movie thinking so much like, is he going to get a big break or not? I was sort of caught up in these little fragments of his life and the sort of journey that he's going on to just get to a spot where just something decent happens to him. And what I love about this movie is, like, just when he gets to that spot, just when he's like, he's got it, he's landed it, he falls down again. And that's how, you know, and it's, I like sort of what it says about life and just kind of following your dreams. And no matter how much you follow your dreams, and there's another movie I think would make an excellent double feature with Inside Llewyn Davis. It's also on my list is Francis Ha, which I think kind of shows the life of a starving artist today in New York versus the life of a starving artist in the 60s in New York. In one of them, in Francis Ha, she is ridiculously in love with what she does, but she's not as good as other people at it.
Right.
In Coen Brothers, he's so good at what he does, but he's not in love with it anymore. And I just think that the two films juxtaposed against each other are really interesting, and sort of how each character deals with it. In Inside Llewyn Davis, he's just kind of miserable, going through a fog, just kind of just getting to the next moment in his life. In Frances Ha, things are miserable. She's not getting paid. She's not making money, but she's living every moment to its fullest. And I just think it's interesting to show the way these two artists sort of navigate the woes in their lives. So watch those – if you can, watch those two together. I think it would be really interesting, especially if you're a creative, if you're an artist in some way. Both of those films will really resonate with you. And as a freelancer and as somebody who's been working hard to pay the bills for 10 years now in this business, both of those films really resonated with me.
All right, well, now we get to celebrate a movie that most of you listening to this have not seen yet and might not get to see for a couple of weeks. And I hate when critics do that. It strikes me as a little bit arrogant of, oh, we've seen this film. But at the very least, just put it on your radar. It's called Her, and it's by Spike Jonze. And for people who might not know right off the bat what Spike Jonze has done before, he did Being John Malkovich, he did the Where the Wild Things Are, he did the film called Adaptation with Nicolas Cage. He makes these surreal sort of think pieces. And to me, with Her, he's come up with his most emotional film to date. And it's on Eric's top 10 also. I think it's a little bit higher on mine. And it's one I really want to revisit to find out where it's going to fall exactly on my top 10. But I think it's going to be near the top, primarily because of this performance by Joaquin Phoenix. For people who aren't familiar with the story, it's set in Los Angeles. It's set in a not so distant future. It's not sci-fi, but it's just a couple of years ahead of where I fear we're actually going, where these new operating systems start to come out, and they have enough intelligence that they can learn and grow and create a bond with the person who initiates them. And so Joaquin Phoenix plays this guy who's coming out of a divorce that's still not exactly finalized, and he launches this operating system. Her name is Samantha. She's voiced by Scarlett Johansson. And he just lets her into his life, basically. And it talks about how we have this reliance on technology, and it asks the question of, like, what's a relationship? Like, if you're having a relationship with operating system, is it really a relationship? If it's somebody who kind of understands you, and we learn through the Samantha character what she wants to sort of learn, and then there are different ways that their relationship is tested, and then other people enter into other relationships with operating systems. And it talks so much about like where society is heading, but it also talks about just when you can connect with something or someone who understands you, you know, how empowering that can be. And even without all of that really interesting stuff going on, the fact that Joaquin Phoenix, you know, carries this movie performing essentially opposite of voice means that he turned in one of the most amazing performances I managed to see this year. And this is in a year where we saw some tremendous, tremendous performances. Phoenix blew me away because he recorded the movie with Samantha Morton, the actress, and never really interacted with Scarlett Johansson, who eventually gives the voice of the girl he's supposed to quote-unquote fall in love with. So to me, it's Spike Jonze operating on just another level of storytelling, and it connected with me emotionally, and I was so blown away by how intelligent it is. I thought the performances are great. It looks really good. It has a bit of a futuristic feel without going too far into it. I can't recommend this movie enough.
Yeah, Spike Jonze, I feel like, is a guy who somehow figured out time travel and is living most of his life 10 years from now. And then he's coming back here and making movies about stuff that's happening 10 years from now. He's been in this sort of frame of mind now for a little while. He's done a short film, at least one short film where about robots and sort of another near future about robots kind of falling in love. And this one is it feels like an extension of that. And yeah, it's inventive. It's beautiful. I really love a lot of the ideas in it. I love how just down to the way people dress in the near future. I mean, it feels so real and so current and yet just out of our reach. Yeah. And I love the world building that's in this movie. I think it's really brilliant. I personally also need to watch it again to see where it's going to fall on my top 10, because it's a film that so many people are loving, but then others like myself kind of left a little dry from it.
Okay.
Felt like the relationship stuff could have been a little bit deeper. I wanted to see more of what it does to a person when they fall in love with someone with a voice on a computer, and I feel like I didn't see enough of the consequences of that.
Okay.
But I really did enjoy it, and I think it does say a lot about relationships, and I love the overall message that you know what, no matter how technology evolves, no matter how great they can make it to where you could almost have an actual meaningful relationship with a voice and a computer, we're always going to need other humans. We're always going to need that human touch,
right?
In order to be truly happy. And I really love the message that it makes in that movie. And I think it's an important message to have now, especially now in an age where we're addicted to our phones. Because this is something that can happen in the very near future, and it's important for us now to say, "Look, it's still about the human connectivity, and that's where it's
all right.
Makes us happy." Let's move on
from the not so distant future to the past. A film that you and I have been talking about since the Toronto International Film Festival, where we both managed to see it up there. I think it just eviscerated us, and it's one that I swore at the time I would never watch again, and then was able to see it a second time and couldn't overlook its brilliance. And it's Steve McQueen's movie, 12 Years a Slave. Tell me why it still affects you to this day, Eric, because I know that it's one that we keep bringing up, you know, in conversation of just how powerful it is.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's just really, really powerful movie, you know, and it harkens back, and it's funny, I told people, imagine the beginning of Saving Private Ryan just over and over and over again. Not as brutally violent as that, but in terms of scenes where you're just left breathless and you can't even comprehend that what you just watched on screen, not only what you just watched, but also that it actually happened in our past. And that's sort of the feeling that I got watching the entirety of 12 Years a Slave. I mean, not only are the performances just overwhelmingly great, specifically Lupita Nyong'o, who's getting a lot of attention. I'm happy that she is. I spoke to her in Toronto, and she's such a lovely girl. But the performance that she delivers, most of it being internal in this movie, is just phenomenal. And yeah, you know, it's just one of those films that kind of knocks you off your feet a little bit. Every once in a while, it's good to get one of those. And I loved the from everything in it. And I think what separates this apart from other films that kind of go take a harsh look back at history is that Steve McQueen, he just loves his camera. He loves to linger. And some of the hardest scenes in this movie, he keeps the camera there, and he doesn't care. He wants you to feel these emotions, you know, and he brings you to the point where you just – you almost want to stand up and say, all right, enough. Just cut to the next freaking scene.
Right, right.
And he brings you right to that point, and I think it's important for that audience member to kind of to go there and to feel that. And that's why I think the film is so successful, because he takes those chances with it and just leaves you breathless.
He also pulls no punches at all. He plunges you into some really disturbing scenarios, but they're always – they're never for shock value. They are always for the benefit of the film. There's a scene in 12 Years a Slave. It's the simplest scene in the world where it's Chiwetel Ejiofor's character is selected by the madam of the house to run a simple errand. Can I trust you to go into town and to come back? And he's walking down a dirt road, and because we've endured what we've endured with this character already, he looks off the path. And I never wanted to scream back at the screen more to this character to, please, God, just run, you know, because I don't know how much more of this I can endure. And it's you, you poor guy, are going through all of this. And I realized how just into the fabric of the storytelling I was, is because McQueen knows exactly how to manipulate the audience. He knows when to put you through some really horrifying things, but he gives you these little pockets of hope, you know, these little glimmers of hope. And then because he's Steve McQueen, he normally stomps on them. But God, it's just such expert storytelling and brilliant filmmaking, and some of the best performances you're going to see all year.
I agree. It's a fascinating story. It's one of many that are based on real life stories this award season. I have to go back and look and see previous years how stacked they were in terms of real life stories, but it just feels particularly like there's a lot of movies this year that are based on stuff that happened in the past. And they're all really good, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of them did a really good job in kind of bringing you the stories. You know, some films that we're not going to mention here, Captain Phillips, Saving Mr. Banks, Wolf of Wall Street, which we'll talk about next week, American Hustle. There's a lot of movies this award season based on real stories. So that brings us to Sean.
Yes, we have time for one more film,
Biggie.
And it's my number one of the year.
It's my number two of the year.
Two of the year. And again, if you've listened to us at all, you kind of can guess that we're going to gush about Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity for a few more minutes. And rightfully so. It's just, you know, I've seen a lot of great movies since seeing Gravity, and they just have not been able to knock it off the top of my perch, Eric. And it's weird because it's one of these films where we were lucky enough to get a DVD screener of it, and I popped it in, and I was rewatching it, and I was like, it's still a good movie, but it's part of it is the theatrical experience.
It is. I was actually going to ask you that, whether or not, because I also watched it on the screener, and and I liked watching it on the screener because I really got to pay attention to the shot selection.
Right, right.
And kind of really take it all in, but it does not equal what it's like watching this on a big screen.
No, but listen, Cuarón made a movie for the big screen, and so I don't want to detract from it because it doesn't hold up to home video play. You know, I think that the movie he wanted to make was something that could be shown on the biggest screen possible because it's immersion. It's from the very get-go, the long tracking shot of coming over the surface of the planet and putting you into the scenario that these astronauts find themselves in, and then just daring you to like hold on to the seat as long as you can as you ride this roller coaster ride with the character played by Sandra Bullock about whether she can get home or not. I don't care if it translates, you know, to watching it at home. And if people didn't go see it on the big screen, then it's their loss. Because to me, it was the most exciting theatrical experience that I've had this year and probably in years past. It reminded me that 3D, when you use 3D the right way, can really benefit a story. I thought it had great performances. I thought it had some of the best action set pieces that we've seen all year. And just, to me, it was movie magic. We mentioned this in depth every time we talk about it. It felt like he figured out some way to just shoot those, you know, actors into space and film them floating around in zero G. And I'm sure at some point I'm going to go back and read about how he did it, but I still don't know a lot of the tricks, and I don't really want to spoil them just yet. To me, it was the most magical experience I had at theaters this year.
I completely agree. There was no theatrical experience I enjoyed more than watching Gravity. And I loved how the places that it went to. A lot of people called it a theme park ride, which I don't feel was fair to the movie. I think that's, you know, a lot of the reason why we go to the movies is to have that roller coaster ride. It's to sort of sit on the edge of your seat. There's a reason why people keep using those terms when they talk about going to the movies, is because it's great to have a film that literally puts you on the edge of your seat, that literally feels like a roller coaster ride, and that you're just feeling all of these emotions up and down and up and down. And it's not like he just repeats the same action sequence over and over. Each one has all of it, has all kinds of little different pieces in it, and the character, we learn a little bit more and more about her as we go along. So each action sequence also has your investment even more in her and in her survival. Sandra Bullock is excellent in it. George Clooney's little role is great in it too. And another aspect that I love about this movie is there's a short film that they made that Kieran's son made. That kind of shows the opposite end. Sandra Bullock has one conversation later on in the movie with somebody is on Earth somewhere, and there's a dog, and he's speaking a different language, and we have no idea what's going on in that scene. But in Gravity, that moment is this human connection that she so desperately desires. But then there's another there's a short film about that moment that they also made that we had no idea even existed. That kind of fills in the pieces there. So you could experience Gravity on different ways, in different forms. And Sean, it's just
let me celebrate the sound, the use of sound in it too. This has been a tremendous year for soundtracks and scores. The sound in Gravity is a character. You know, it's when they can hear certain things, when they drowned out sound, sometimes the eerie silence is enough to just pull you to the edge of your seat. You know, from a craft's perspective, it's gorgeous to look at. It's gorgeous to listen to. It's masterful storytelling.
I agree. So those are the movies. I managed to mention Frances Ha and talk a little bit about that because I could not. It's my number four. I could not get that in. But those are the movies we talked about. Our favorite movies of the year. Our picks for the best movies of the year. Stoker, got to see it. That's out on DVD Blu-ray right now. Inside Llewyn Davis, which is I think in expanding nationwide this week.
Okay.
So see it Friday. See it this weekend if you can. Love the film.
Yes.
Her comes out Christmas. Or is it limited? I think most of the country will be able to see it early January, maybe?
Yes, very limited at Christmas for award consideration, and then it's going to come out middle of January.
Okay, but go see that one. It'll be a really nice little surprise for you in the middle of January if that's when it arrives in your neck of the woods. We also mentioned 12 Years a Slave. Which is it still in theaters? I think it's actually – are they re-releasing it this weekend, Sean?
Fox Searchlight is giving it another big strong push for the holiday season. Not that it's a holiday movie, but hopefully more eyeballs will check it out. I think it's doing very well because of the critical recognition that it's getting.
Yeah.
But yes, it's coming back to a theater near you, so please go out of your way and see it. Just know what you're getting into, but know that it's a masterful story.
Exactly. Frances Ha, which is a movie I mentioned with Inside Llewyn Davis, is on DVD Blu-ray. You can see that. It's actually – I know it was streaming on Netflix. It may still be streaming on Netflix. If you have Netflix at home, you can watch it that way. And Gravity, Sean, is Gravity still in theaters?
If it is, it's been relegated to very small screens at this point, which is unfortunate because of the Thors and the Hunger Games and the Hobbits of the world. And I understand that people need to see those big also. But if you missed Gravity on the biggest screen in your town, you missed a big component of the experience.
You know what? I can't imagine they won't re-release that, though.
Because
it's going to be nominated for Oscars. I cannot imagine them not re-releasing that film. I will personally email everyone I know at Warner Brothers and say, put this back on screen.
Give it a very specific IMAX run for you know, that'd be so great.
If they could find a dry period, I don't know if February, maybe there's a, before all the big March movies hit, maybe there's a dry period in there for IMAX to kind of put it out for a weekend or for a week. But I really cannot see Warner Brothers not putting that back out in theaters for at least a few days. So keep an eye on it and we'll let you know if it does. Sean O'Connell, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure. And listen, there's so many movies we didn't even get to. That's how good this year has been. So we'll keep talking them up in future podcasts, but these are the ones that we thought were the top of our list.
The best movies of the year. Next week, Sean and I will run down all of your Christmas movies, and we'll also talk about Anchorman 2, which we didn't get to today. We're going to talk about all the movies coming out this on Christmas, and there's a ton of them. Which ones you should go see, who with your family you should go see them with, because we all have our families hanging out at our house during the holidays, and who do you go to the mom with, who do you go see with dad with, what are you going to see, who about a meet, what's a woozy, to quote the Matthew McConaughey from Wolf of Wall Street. We will set it straight for you guys next week. Sean O'Connell, thank you very much for joining me, and you guys out there, go and enjoy your weekend at the movies.